You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
All right, Bob, what's the bigger story here locally? Tennessee baseball breaking out the brooms or the orange and white game?
Oh, I think it's I think it was a great weekend in general for Tennessee sports, which I would love to spend a little time talking about today. But for me, the bigger story was the baseball team sweeping LSU, because the way I see it, I also recognize that LSU is towards the bottom of the conference right now, but it's this is one of those, they're the defending World Series, College World Series champion. You throw out the record, they also ended Tennessee's season last year. This thing mattered on a lot of levels, and the Vols took care of business too. It was an impressive weekend.
Yeah, it's a little bittersweet when I see the record of Tony Vitello, just how he dominates LSU. I think 10-4 has the last 14. Knowing that, like, the two that are on the loss column are the two biggest ones. I got an LSU friend, went to the game on Friday, and talking trash, and he knows they suck, and we know that we're, you know, kind of consistently been a better program than LSU since Tony took over, but they got the national championship and they beat you to get there. So you can't go full-fledged trash talk with him. He's got that trump card. But it was still nice to go and finally get a sweep. Finally get a sweep. Tennessee has been needing a sweep all year. Finally got one, and it was against a team, like, if you had laid out the schedule before the season and looked and said, which ones do you want to sweep, rank them in order of ones you want the most, LSU at home probably comes in at what, number two? Is that fair to say, Sam?
Yeah.
Like, Vanderbilt's number one. You want to sweep them just to kind of continue owning them. It drives them crazy. So, like, it's really funny that you do own them. But then, like, LSU at home probably would have been number two. And so far on the schedule of the teams you've played, LSU would be that team you want to sweep of all your opponents you've had so far. So it's nice that Tennessee, I don't want to say peaking at the right time or playing their best ball, but played a really solid weekend series and checked off some boxes that I've needed to see them check off. Finally won some close games. Finally won some games where your offense didn't just come out and score 15 runs. I'd been personally kind of waiting to see that. I think we talk about it every time we come out. It's like, yeah, either we run rule or we, you know, we lose. It's kind of how it felt like it had gone for Tennessee so far this year. And it was nice to see them grind out some wins and show, hey, no, wait, our pitching is kind of rounding into shape a little bit. We're still not full strength, but our pitching is showing they're kind of figuring some things out, because Frank Anderson always figures things out. And Tony Vitello, you know, I was talking with a friend on Saturday who was, you know, kind of complaining about some of the bullpen stuff and like, oh man, why hasn't this guy, why haven't we been using him all year? He's pitching great. And I'm like, well, it does kind of seem to be what Tony does. Sometimes it takes him a little bit to figure things out, but I feel like every year by the end of the year, he has figured his team out. Kind of like what Calipari claims he does, you know, or claims what he did at Kentucky, where he's like, hey, you know, we're built for the tournament. Just let us figure things out. Let us get to the end of the season. And sometimes Kentucky figured it out. Most of the times they didn't. I feel like Vitello deserves that same benefit of the doubt. He actually does figure it out by the end of the year. And I do feel like the rotation and the bullpen, he's kind of got mapped out now.
So Friday night, Kirby got the save. Did you get down to the field level? Hey, Kirby.
I was there, but I didn't bother him. We just gave each other a little bit of a head nod. He came in and, you know, I won't say pitched great, but he got out of a jam in the eighth, and then in the ninth got touched up a little bit, but got out of it without blowing the win and the 1.5 run line cover. So yeah, Kirby was the fireman coming out, and he got it done. And then, you know, on Saturday, Tennessee had to battle, a first-round pick, basically, right? Because Holman's been really good for them. Despite LSU stinking, Holman, the Alabama transfer, has been really good. He chose LSU over Tennessee. I don't know if he regrets that decision, but, he shut down Tennessee's offense for a lot of that game. But Tennessee was able to break through in the sixth, add a run in the eighth, and get a 3-1 win. And win one of those games that I was talking about where things don't necessarily go well, but you keep grinding and you find a way to win. Beam pitched out of trouble. Tennessee had no hits until the fifth or sixth inning? Was it the sixth inning he didn't have a hit? And was able to win 3-1. And then yesterday, that one was even back and forth a little bit too, and they broke through. Christian Moore was a beast. He won that game for you.
I felt like Saturday and Sunday's games, like Saturday, to your point, John, was the first time I felt like I saw it this season where it was a kind of a exercise in grit. They really did have to fight through and facing a tough pitcher, but they still had enough in the tank to win. Beam was solid. And then on Sunday, we got to see what happens late, like when you have offense that is pretty elite and clutch. I mean, because that game was tied up in the latter part of the game, but then Tennessee just put it away with the long ball. And how about Amick? Welcome back. My God. Wasn't it? He hit it first pitch, right?
First pitch and his first at bat returning. Yeah, drilled one to left field.
It's a stud.
Yeah, I guess he's healthy.
Yeah.
I guess he's healthy. So, he was awesome. Or at least that moment was awesome. I don't really know what he did the entire weekend series. Was he really good this series? Christian Moore, I know, and Blake Burke. Really, your 1-6 hitters were nails. Your 1-5, especially. The back of the lineup struggled a bit, as the back of the lineup is one to do. But, yeah, I don't know. Did Amick have a solid weekend outside of that first bomb?
Yeah, I mean, he played pretty solid, I would say. Okay. I wouldn't say it was back to what he was doing, star potential stuff. But, yeah, I mean, obviously the home run starting off is huge. I would say that Christian Moore was kind of more the
more story of the weekend. Moore, Burke, and Dreiling are just awesome. Has Blake Burke
– Tears in there too.
Yeah.
It's just a tough four.
I didn't feel like Tears was very good this weekend when I was watching. But, yeah, he's been a beast this year. I don't want to forget him. But I thought this weekend in particular – Burke, Moore, and Dreiling were just nails. Whenever you needed big hits, they came up. Burke feels like he's playing his way into the first or second round of the draft. I'm not going to act like an expert on the baseball draft and how that works, but with his power, now that the average is more consistent and he's showing that you can't just throw him breaking balls and get him out now, it feels like the glove is pretty solid. I thought he made some good defensive plays this weekend. Is he got a chance? Is he rising that high? Is that too steep to say right now?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not probably as I don't know as much about all of that stuff. So I wouldn't say that he is exactly first rounder material yet. But I think he does get drafted pretty high. I would probably be a little bit more safe on the Billy Amick train of him getting into the first round kind of more than a guy like Blake Burke.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, when I watch him, it just the power obviously jumps off. Smacking more doubles, seems like he's figured things out at the plate. And then, yeah, I thought the defense was pretty impressive this weekend. So maybe not.
This is an article that I'm reading right now from I guess more towards the start of the season, and it had him in the third to fifth round range a little bit.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think he's been pretty good this year, though, and would maybe rise up a little bit. So I don't know. But that's just something I was watching on Friday. I was like, maybe. I debated with myself in my head, and I figured I'll ask Sam, see what he thinks. Got the sweep, though. A record that LSU probably didn't want to break the first time they had lost five SEC series in a row since 77.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're struggling a little bit without that pitching coach now down at Georgia.
Is that it? Is it that simple?
I mean, their bullpen is definitely not as strong this year, but I mean, you know, and then you
bullpen kind of sucked last year too, though, until they had to be good, then they were good.
Yeah, and then you know you compound it with losing some guys to the major leagues and stuff like that. Yeah, you're obviously gonna take a little bit of a step back, but even for a program like LSU, it's been a little surprising this year.
Yeah, my path has been to put down Jay Johnson and talk about, hey, you know, he won with was it Minaldi or however the hell you say that guy's name, the old man. Won with his players, got lucky with the transfer. Mineria. Yeah, I was like, outside of that, what's his name?
Mineria,
there, yeah. Won with his players and got lucky on a transfer. I was like, otherwise he sucks. So I was like, compare him maybe to Kentucky basketball. Like, yeah, if you win one championship and suck the other 6 years, like, I guess you feel good. Like, Tony Bennett, Virginia, and, you know, that's what I've been trying to go with to try to get him to bend the knee a little bit to Tennessee.
I'm just looking at this batting order, man. And they kept it consistent all the way through the series, too. You go one through – well, I was going to say one through four, but it goes on. You know, you got Moore, Burke, Amick, Tears, and then Dreiling, Curley. I mean, and if the pitching can show up like it did this weekend – That's pretty tough combination right now. Feels like they're feeling themselves.
Do we think Snead has, you know, firmly taken over kind of the closer role, the high leverage guy? He came in on Saturday and, you know, shut the door with two innings and three strikeouts and
blew LSU a kiss as he came off the mound.
No, he seems like the high leverage guy that is their go-to. You know, I think they're comfortable in kind of throwing him in any spot if he – you know, if you kind of do those opener roles and you can only get like three innings out of your opener, I think they're comfortable throwing him in there and trying to get four or five innings. And then, you know, he's good with going into the, you know, the eighth and ninth inning and just kind of shutting a game down. So, yeah, I think they've definitely kind of solidified Snead as that jack of all trades a little bit in the bullpen.
You know, you kind of had a couple guys do that this weekend, right? Like A.J. Causey didn't get the start on Friday, but he pitched 4 2/3. He was the second guy out, and he was pretty good.
Yeah, he looked a lot better.
Was a little worried about him because, you know, he came in and his very first inning got into, you know, was in a little bit of trouble, and Tommy White got the single through the middle and the bases were loaded. You're like, oh, man, is he going to get out of it? But he got out of it, and after that kind of settled down. And then yesterday you had, was it yesterday?
I think Banky, I believe, came in yesterday, yeah.
Just got one out, right?
Well, no, Combs is who I was thinking of. Because, like, Combs came in and got the one inning, and they were talking about, well, you know, if Tennessee hadn't scored those two in the eighth, you might have gone back to Snead, but they're going to let Combs go back out there since he had a clean inning in his first inning. And you got the win, kind of played you a favor, gave you two extra runs going into the ninth to kind of really, like, demoralize LSU. I would have been nervous going in only up two, but – their outfielders had a big blunder. Wind knocks the ball down. It falls down like a little league double there and gave you some room. And Combs is able to come back out and pitch that ninth.
The wind was tricky this weekend in the park.
It looked like it. It wasn't very – I don't feel like it was very windy on Friday.
Yeah, not as much Friday, but definitely Saturday, Sunday. I feel like it was affecting it more.
Yeah, I feel like we were at the Masters. But Tennessee able to get a big sweep. That felt good, able to move into second place in the SEC East, if you care about that, and big weekend series as they head to number one.
Yeah, the Batcats.
Yeah, they're good, man. I don't know if they're, like, legitimately great or anything. Like, I don't know if they're 13-1 good, but on Saturday I saw they were down, was it 7-0 in the game two? And you're like, okay, here we go. And then, nope, they just came out and scored a bunch of runs late in the game and still won that one kind of comfortably after falling down 7-0. And that felt special. But, yeah, they're 13-1 in conference. Tennessee 10-5. So can go to Lexington this weekend and get back in the race. And just in the SEC in general, you got a little bit of a solid done for you by Alabama. Maybe I have to retract some of that Alabama slander as they were able to take the Saturday and Sunday games against Arkansas. So the race for the actual conference championship now kind of, I don't want to say open, but you can get back in it if you have a good weekend this weekend.
Keep chipping away with series wins.
keep chipping away with series wins. Bad weekend for Vandy as they were swept. Kind of dominated, too, all weekend. A&M killed them.
I want to say they got run ruled. Was it twice or just once?
I think they got – I don't know if they – I know they got run ruled on Friday. Yeah. I don't know if they got run ruled on Saturday. I know they were headed towards it, though. I want to say they did, but I might be wrong. I know for like the series, it was like 32-6 or something crazy like that. Like they didn't show up. They didn't show up. All right, good little weekend of SEC baseball. We'll talk the orange and white game coming up. Stick with us. Drank White Claw Hard Seltzer this weekend. Drank White Claw Hard Seltzer on Saturday. Probably, I've learned some things. I've learned some things, Bob. It's the first year we've ever planned a golf tournament. Feel like on these golf tournaments, I maybe drop the ball. Feel like we maybe should have done it on a Friday. Give people an excuse to get out of work. That's some feedback I've gotten from some businesses.
Oh,
like,
yeah. That's usually a good point. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. I tried to talk with some experts about it. No one really gave me a heads up. So maybe if year one goes off smoothly, year two we'll do it on a Friday and have more of a plan, and you know, maybe then the businesses can let their employees off type of thing. Because that was something I ran to, is a lot of people be like, you know, on Saturday we can't really get out there and can't really make our workers go out there. I was like, makes sense. Makes sense. But we still got 5 days to get ready. April 20th, that's Saturday, the first ever Fan Run Open. I'm excited for it. I'm stressed about it. I want it to go off very smoothly. I'm going to have some White Claw there. We're going to have a good time. We're going to play some golf. You can, too. You can sign up your team at fanrunradio.com/shop. You can sign up as an individual and be placed on a team if you just don't have any friends that want to play golf with you. But you still got time. We still got a couple teams left. I'm trying to fill it up, so go, go, go. fanrunradio.com/shop. I'll have the White Claw on deck. The orange and white game on Saturday, got to be honest, the game somehow failed to meet up to the expectations I had. And the expectations I had were very, very, very low, as the excitement for it was very, very, very low, as we talked about the last, you know, month. Like, I don't really care about this. Not a lot of juice surrounding it. Don't see a lot of people counting down the days like in the past. And the game somehow even felt up to live up to that, I thought.
Yeah, I think what they did do was they created some buzz by just having Josh Dobbs there, Trey Smith there, Juwan Jennings there, doing, you know, bringing some really noteworthy VFLs in, gave Kim Caldwell a lot of love. So that helped. The football itself, and we'll talk with Ryan Shumpert in the next hour. It'll be interesting to get his take, too. It feels like you kind of had to dig to find what were the good takeaways. You know, I mean, you got good athletes out there, so you're going to see some plays. But, you know, Jake Merklinger, for example, you know, ran for a touchdown, but in real game scenario, I don't know if that would have happened because, you know, they kind of don't do much hands-on when he's when your quarterback's running like that. So it's good to see he can run, but you don't really know what that would be like in a real game setting. That's just one example. But we did see some, I don't know, we saw some things. You know, I'm impressed with Mike Matthews, I will say that. I mean, just from the standpoint that obviously, we've seen some spring practice video of him making some great catches, and he had a touchdown in that game. Really nice ball from, I think it was from Gaston Moore. But he, I also at one point saw him lay out a block that was really encouraging because, you know, if you got a receiver like that, that kind of reminded me of something like Brew McCoy would do. But, you definitely have to dig a little.
No, Matthews should be a star here at Tennessee. And I got to say, the 89 has grown on me a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm now rooting for him to keep 89. I don't think he's going to. He probably doesn't feel fast wearing number 89, but like, I kind of like it. It's grown on me a little bit. Merklinger at least showed he can play a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he is ever going to be a factor here at Tennessee just because of the depth of the quarterback position. When you look at Nico and George McIntyre, like I don't know if he's ever going to be a factor here, but he looks like he could play. Gaston Moore, to me, like he's a big takeaway from me. Is like he looks pretty good when he plays.
Kind of, I kind of keep thinking of him like a, it's almost like a Gardner Minshew vibe as far as just efficiency and just going out and getting stuff done, understanding the system, and
kind of feels like he could play somewhere.
Yeah,
and like, you know, not somewhere big, but like if you wanted to get out on the field, like I feel like he could be a group five starter. Then also found myself thinking, what would our record have been last year with Gaston Moore as a quarterback? Do you think we're worse than 8-4?
Yeah. Yeah.
You do?
Sam seems a little more skeptical of Gaston Moore than you and I.
I mean, I just don't think we're an 8-win football team with him at quarterback
still. Okay.
I would say like 6 or 7.
Okay. I would then ask like what games you're talking about. Like I guess maybe Kentucky. Maybe.
Maybe A&M, but like Milton didn't play that great in A&M game either.
No, I mean
Williams won you that game.
Yeah, I was gonna say the A&M guy. I can't. Any quarterback prove that they could have won that game that day. Anybody could have gone out there and done what Milton gave you against A&M. I don't know. I just found myself thinking like, Gaston's got a little something. He's got a little something. I wonder what he would have gone, because it feels like he'd have gone 8-4 at least last year.
He's also dicing up like our freshman.
Yeah. Point B, the point being that, hey, he looks like he threw a couple nice balls.
No, he definitely did.
I always love hearing a Chaz Nimrod sighting, too. I just love hearing that name.
Yeah, he made some plays. He caught that touchdown, and
yeah.
He looks good.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you hear Chaz Nimrod, and I'm like, oh, man. Just feels like such an unfortunate name for, like, a big-time athlete. Not to ever put anybody's name down, but like it's always my first initial take. But yeah, like outside of, you know, Nico had a good throw. Matthews, the big catch. Me just wondering about what could have been with Gaston. Like, I got no other takeaway. Sam, anything from the orange and white game or coming out of the celebration surrounding it. It did feel like it was a good Saturday day. Like, I do feel like Tennessee kind of figured out, like, hey, we'll throw some other stuff around it. Yeah, it helps whenever you have a new women's coach to introduce. And, yeah, it helps when you have SEC champions to celebrate on the basketball court and the basketball side of things. But it did feel like it was a good day, even if the game kind of sucked and felt useless.
Yeah, I mean, you put on a decent show. To me, it felt like there was just – too many of your key contributors that just weren't really playing for you to know, I guess, exactly how they're going to look. And you're not exactly going to see how they look anyways in a spring game, but it did just kind of feel like you were missing a lot of the pieces that are going to be out there starting in the fall. So there's just, you know, you just got to get your takeaways from your young guys and kind of walk out of there happy and healthy, I guess.
To me, the spring game is dead. It just felt useless. It almost felt like just an audition for the transfer portal. Like, is kind of what it felt like to me. Like, hey, showcase yourself, make a couple plays, let some other teams see what you can do is almost what it felt like. Hey, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the guys who made some plays are, you know, now enter the portal. Or some guys who didn't get on the field to make any plays enter the portal. Like, that's what it felt like to me. I haven't really cared about a spring game in a while, but like this felt like a new low. Kind of like when we talk about with the Pro Bowl in the NFL or the All-Star game in the NBA, like guys just going through the motions. There wasn't much to gain from it. Now, obviously, I know it's like a practice. That's what it is. But like hyping it up, putting it on TV, just feels like a waste now.
Well, as usual, it wasn't easy to find TV. It was, buried on ESPN Plus, but
where it should be, quite frankly.
No, I agree with that. The one thing I would say, and I do think this was mission accomplished by Tennessee, and that was, your points are good on the orange and white game in general, but I felt like Saturday in particular, if you think about everything that was going on between, you had the Vol walk, which was great, and you incorporated the basketball team into that, like you said, hoisted the SEC conference championship trophy, had the Kim Caldwell vibe going with that. Got to admit, I'm not going to be buying a Lady Vols bomber jacket, but that thing was pretty slick she was wearing. And having her out there, and just, I think maybe maybe a tip of the hat to Danny White for recognizing, man, the orange and white game may not be what it's been, but we need to make this, particularly when you have recruits watching, you have transfer portal guys for basketball in, you got to make this thing, like you used the term earlier in the show for Scottie Scheffler, like a coronation. This was like, to me, it was almost like a full-on like block party about how good the athletic department is. And you had the baseball series, too, going on.
Yeah, like I don't know if next year we'll be able to have the same type of thing, though, right? Because you're not going to be introducing a new coach, most likely, and you might not be celebrating a championship. So it was a perfect storm in that regard, because otherwise, without that juice – I don't know if the weekend feels the same, but the weather cooperated. The weather was perfect,
yep.
And you did have those things to celebrate. And yeah, Kim rocks that Lady Vol gear. The Lady Vol gear looks pretty good. She had a hoodie on too, like a dark, like charcoal with like a little blue on it. It's like hoodie I saw in an interview or something that I thought looked really, really nice. Lady Vol's got some nice gear. I have said for the last like 3 or 4 years that I wish we would just get rid of the spring game across the country and just make it a scrimmage. Like that's when you should bring the ETSUs of the world in. That's when you should bring the Austin Peas of the world in and like have some type of understanding and agreement. Like, hey, we're not doing any cheap shots. Like we might not even go like 100% full speed, and we'll do some situational stuff. Maybe like it might not be your traditional game, but like bring in a small local school. Figure something out. I'm sure the ESPN would much rather have that than your spring game. Sell some tickets for $20 under the guise of a real game and actually go through more of a dress rehearsal. Like, to me, that would be much more interesting and much more beneficial, too, and see what these guys look like in actual game scenarios. Going up against people that they don't hit every day, that you're going to feel bad hitting. And even if you don't want to make the quarterbacks all the way live, that's fine. And like, even if Tennessee was making, you know, the game live and the quarterback live, like you could still play all the quarterbacks and get them out there. You know, if you're playing an ETSU of the world, I wouldn't want Nico out there playing more than like a couple series, kind of like just a preseason NFL game, you know, how they do with the starters there. That to me feels like it would be a lot more interesting. And you'd also be helping one of those small schools that you're always talking about. Like, this is why we have to do the bye games during the season, is we have to help these programs. We have to help them make some money. Well, do it in the spring. It's kind of what I think they should do. But do you think Ole Miss's strategy is interesting? Is that hell something yeah. You want to see in the future? You say yes, Sam?
Anything with Joey Chestnut in it, I'm in.
They had a beautiful day themselves. They had a slam dunk contest. They had a hot dog eating contest, a little 7-on-7, which, you know, goes ahead and removes the doubt of like, hey, we're not really going to hit each other. We're going to play a Pro Bowl style here. We're going to let the receivers go out and run some routes. We'll let the quarterbacks throw it. No one's getting hit. And, yeah, and then some tug of war stuff, and brought in some sororities down there, I think I saw, and just a whole bunch of things. So you liked that, Sam?
Yeah, I just like the Joey Chestnut stuff. I saw some guy got an autograph of Joey Chestnut on a hot dog bun. I thought that was a great, great sign.
Chestnut showed up. Apparently Kiffin just slid in his DMs to invite him. Yeah, it's what the story I'm reading says.
I was wondering how he got down there.
Said Kiffin slid in his DMs to invite him. He ate 20 hot dogs in 90 seconds. And then, yeah, apparently that led to a really funny press conference. So, like, the field looked weird because they only had, like, a 50-yard field.
Yeah, 50-yard field.
But I think I would have liked that more than what we did.
What about like NFL training camp stuff where they, you know, they invite another team to to practice with them. But then it's just like a – you just do like a little practice in like a 7v7 maybe.
Well, that's kind of what I mean with the scrimmage. Like if you want to make it more of a scripted practice.
Right? I'm saying like Power 5 opponents though, not like ETSU. Like you go and play like – you swap conferences and like the Big 12 or something.
Nah,
because like
then I think you have to worry about like who's coming on to whose field. Do you have to do it twice? To like, does Tennessee have to go to Baylor and Baylor? Well, then why would Baylor come to Tennessee? Like, why would they be willing to do that? So, like, I think it has to be a small local
school.
You
switch off like year and year, maybe.
Nah, see, I think you want it to be at home for the reasons we talk about with the recruiting, the basketball portal guys, the football. Because it's a big football recruiting weekend too. You want the fans to get the energy going. Like you, if you remove the fan partying aspect of it and the fans getting on campus, like if you remove that aspect of it, to me it becomes completely worthless. That's why you have to kind of. Big boy, one of the small schools, like, hey, your kids at Austin Peay, they've always dreamed of playing in Neyland Stadium. Hey, we'll give you X amount of tickets. You can bring your fans. And then it just becomes more of a celebration in that regard. I understand what you're saying in terms of the open scrimmages that the NFL has in training camps. I just they do that around preseason games, right, where the team's already in town. I don't think you could do that in college because I don't want Tennessee having to go to Clemson to do their spring scrimmage.
I don't think ETSU really moves the needle either.
Well, no, it doesn't. It's just a different school. And, like, you actually, like, it, you know, it just – at least you maybe get a better idea of, like, the starters. And, like, you don't have to worry about, well, my defense made great plays. Yeah, does that mean my quarterback sucks? Hey, like, my defense has a shutout in the first quarter. Was that because their offense can't score? It just removes that aspect of it. Because, like, yeah, the defense looked great in the first quarter, but that's because the offense couldn't get off the ground and get going, and that just kind of – suck to watch.
It kind of reminds me of, remember the year after COVID, they did the spring football with the FCS school?
Yeah.
So that's it's an interesting point. Back to Ole Miss, did you see Brandon Turnage's dunks?
No, I didn't. I didn't see any dunks coming out of the dunk contest.
He won the dunk contest.
Okay.
Bastard.
Did he have any memorable ones?
Yeah. He had a windmill thing that looked like, I mean – most basketball players would have been impressed.
I don't know why he had to curse his name there, Bob. He's a good dunker. What's he supposed to do? Lay it up?
No, not about that. Just
leaving. I mean, I don't think that could have been one of those where you get fired things we talk about. Like,
maybe.
I wanted new blood in the secondary badly. So, like, if a couple go to Ole Miss, if you were talking about Byron Young, okay, I'll listen to that one, but. When you look and see, like, you know, Josh Heupel did that was my big takeaway maybe of the whole weekend was Josh Heupel. He has this spring tried to put over the defensive line every time he's gotten a chance. And on Saturday, during that very awkward interview.
That guy did a terrible job.
Yeah, I thought he did a terrible job with Dobbs, too. Who is that guy?
Oh, I didn't see the whole thing.
But yeah, I don't know who that guy was either.
He immediately said Heupel was in year five.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, I thought that – he was bad with Dobbs, too. Like, I don't know who that was, and there's a reason he's on the ESPN Plus, like, spring game circuit. I know he's not one of their main stars, but I thought he was bad there. But Heupel did, you know, was asked a question about the defensive line. He's like, the guy was like, is that going to be the strength of the defense? He's like, well, not only the defense, it's going to be hopefully the strength of our whole team. And talked about, you know, just how good and deep they are. And I liked that they're putting over the defensive line. So, yeah, Byron Young Tyler Barron, and enjoy Ole Miss down there because the team doesn't really need you on the defensive line. We're good.
You know, one thing I thought about too was it felt to me this was one takeaway with the orange and white game for me was we talked about Gaston Moore. Obviously, Nico came in, was pretty efficient. We didn't just, you know, and we didn't expect to see a lot of him, but I really felt like we didn't see much of him at all. But that to say, I felt like maybe there was an emphasis. It just felt like this looked more like a 22 offense than what we saw last year, you know. And we know what the key is there. It's who's under center.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't pay enough attention to feel the magic of the offense get back. I just know the first quarter was dreadful, and I kind of checked out mentally after that.
Yeah.
And please note, I know Tyler Barron's at Ole Miss and Byron Young is with the Rams. It's just a little slip-up. The defensive lineman was gone. I haven't thought of him in a while. I know the difference. Tyler Barron's the one that turned his back on the boys. But I don't think we are going to miss him. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with some headlines over the weekend to catch you up on some things you might have missed. Stick with us. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. All right, let's do a little RTI read and react, our weekly chat with Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. Ryan, top of the morning to you. Thanks for joining us. Hope you're well.
Yeah, of course. Good morning. Happy Monday.
What's your biggest takeaway coming out of the orange and white game?
I think it's obviously a game that's kind of hard to have too many takeaways, but I think probably the thing that stood out to me the most was just the new receivers, whether that's Mike Matthews. Obviously he had the long, I think it was 63-yard touchdown in the first half, and that was a really impressive adjustment he kind of made on the ball, or whether it's Chris Brazell, the Tulane transfer, I thought had a really good game, and I left the spring game feeling, you know, much better or impressed maybe by those guys, and maybe feeling like, I don't know, I feel like this is something people say every year, and I've usually kind of fought it off, but it just feels like this receiver rotation is going to have to be bigger next season than it's really been at any point in Josh Heupel's era.
Anything from Nico to make you think any differently about him? Because the offense was stuck in the mud to come out of the first quarter, but that's to be expected. The spring games always feels like the defense gets off to an early start. I thought Nico showed some flashes in the second quarter, but overall wasn't overly impressed, but nothing out of the ordinary.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Tennessee's first-team offensive line didn't have, you know, three of its interior offensive line starters out there. I think John Campbell even was pretty limited in what he did. And Tennessee's defensive line is expected to be the strength of the team. And, you know, really what Nico maybe does best is his ability to create when things break down in the pocket. But in a spring game, when it's two-hand touch, kind of take that ability away a little bit. So Nico, that first-team offense wasn't overly impressive, but I don't think it necessarily said a ton about Nico in a negative way. I think it was more just about the circumstances of Tennessee's offensive line struggling to handle Tennessee's defensive line.
Morning, Ryan. Question for you back to the receivers, because I was watching that, and I was same way. I was really struck by Matthews. But my question is, you mentioned Matthews, you mentioned Brazell. We know Chaz Nimrod, who we love saying his name, got a touchdown. And you think also about the ones that didn't play, you know, Squirrel and Brew. And is there, I guess, from your perspective, and we know that this offense is kind of high volume from the standpoint of play calls, et cetera, is there enough room for all of these guys to eat, do you think?
No, I really don't. Because, I mean, even if you go, Tennessee were to go 60, which would be really unheard of, I mean, I'd throw Braylon Staley in there, early freshman receiver who didn't play in the spring game either. I've been impressed by him, too, from what I've seen at practice, and it feels like to me he has a great chance to be Squirrel White's backup in the slot. Obviously, Nimrod can kind of play inside and outside, and Nimrod would probably be ahead of him in a depth chart, and then maybe the way things would fall that Nimrod would be moved back to the slot. But I don't really think there is, and I think that'll be an interesting spot to potentially watch today and in this week as the transfer portal opens. Does one of those Tennessee receivers jump in? Because it does feel right now like there's just too many mouths to feed there.
A part of the weekend was Tennessee basketball recruiting the transfer portal heavy. A lot of big names on campus that Tennessee was looking at. You had our boy Darlin Stone from Hofstra. You had the Belmont transfer. Is that Cade Tyson? Is that
correct.
His name?
Cade Tyson.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the latest on them coming out of the weekend?
Yeah, Darlington Dubar is a guy that Tennessee was putting the full court press on, and I think they feel really good about that one. Coming out of his visit, I would, you know, put Tennessee to be the favorite to land him right now. Cade Tyson, I think, is going to be a lot harder to land. He's going to go to North Carolina this coming weekend, and then we'll see what he does after that. I know Kansas and UConn were two names that were thrown out there with him, too. So they're in deep waters with Tyson. That's going to be a hard one. They do have some connections there because they recruited his older brother, I believe it was Hunter Tyson, who ended up going to Clemson and I believe is now in the NBA or in the G League, one of the two. So they do have some prior connections to Tyson, but that's going to be a much harder one to land. But we'll see how that goes in the next week or so as he takes a few more visits, or at least one more visit.
Hey, Ryan, have you heard any more development on, there was talk of this kid from Charlotte, Igor Milicic, coming in, what, maybe tomorrow for a visit. Is that still on tap? Because I know that there was maybe some chatter that, you know, similar player to D Stone. I mean, size is a little different, but still the same kind of player. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Is that still on target for him to visit tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, kind of in flux. Or, you know, what I was told was that if Tennessee lands Dubar, that Milicic would not come in for a visit. But obviously the plan is for him to visit on Tuesday, and we're sitting here on Monday morning, and Dubar hasn't committed. So, you know, at this point, I think that visit is still, you know, on tap. He still plans to come in, but obviously, like anything in the transfer portal, that can change pretty quickly.
Do you have a breakdown? Because Tennessee's in the mix with four or five guys. Do you have a good idea of, like, who's getting prioritized? Do we have a wish list, an order on that, or is it just kind of also fluid that it changes from day to day?
I think you've got to have a wish list at certain spots. I mean, just right there, I feel like Dubar is ahead of Milicic. I feel like I don't know what you'd say the wish list is in terms of, like, Cade Tyson, who's really more of a true three, you know, more similar. He's kind of in between a guard and a post guy, like a stretch four like Dubar, as opposed to maybe a Roddy Gale, the Ohio State guy. I know that Mike Wilson had it, that they're trying to get a visit lined up with him this week. So, you know, it feels like you kind of know the top guys at some certain spots. And at a couple of those spots where you know a couple of names, I feel like the order is somewhat clear. But right now, you know, it feels like outside of point guard, they're recruiting just about every position in the portal. So while there is a lot of names, it does kind of feel like it's still spread out as, you know, where to what position all those guys play.
Yeah, this Roddy Gale one, because I saw Mike's article too, and that one kind of, well, we sit here thinking we're dialed in and we hear about all these players, and that one came out of nowhere for me, but it just underscores what you were just saying. I mean, these guys, the coaching staff has targets, right? And, you know, it's not their job to share them with everybody. But that one, did that kind of surprise you? I mean, not necessarily looks like a good player. I'm just saying that it was just not a name I had heard.
No, I hadn't heard that name either before Mike's report. And I think maybe the thing that's intriguing about him is just the fact that he's just a sophomore. And so many of these guys Tennessee has been targeting is who's going to be super seniors next year, or at the very least are veterans. I guess Tyson would be in the same boat where he's a junior too. It feels like that's the tough part of this now, especially when Tennessee's having to recruit a bunch of guys and they have a bunch of roster spots to fill out. Is, you know, Rick Barnes talks about it all the time, you're attacking this stuff in the offseason to be the best that you can be next season, but there is also a fine line of wanting to set yourself up with some multi-year guys too, that, you know, lends you to potentially having success and being able, those guys being able to grow in your program too, which obviously is something that Barnes and Tennessee like. So to me, that's maybe the most intriguing thing about a guy that averaged, you know, 13.5 points a game in the Big Ten last year.
Talking with Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. I saw Jemai Meshack go through the Vol walk. I saw him there saying that Rocky Top is home sweet home. We did not see Tobe Awaka, who of course is in the transfer portal. What's the latest on Tobe Awaka?
I think returning is still in play for Awaka. I believe that he's going to go through the process. He's probably going to go on some visits. He's going to talk to other schools. So I don't expect anything imminently, but like you kind of have to today, and obviously he's already entered the portal, but I think Tennessee's going to be recruiting a walk, and they're going to be recruiting their own roster, and they're certainly not ruling out the possibility of him coming back. And to me right now, that feels like Tennessee's, you talk about the biggest priority at the center spot in the portal, to me the biggest priority right now for Tennessee, it seems like a walk, but and while I think that's in play, I think that's a possibility, I'm not necessarily expecting anything imminently on that front either.
Yeah, we saw the Roddy Gale Jr. name pop up from Ohio State. He's a 6'4 guard. We had, you know, Milicic. We've got him. We got D Stone. We got Tyson. All those guys are, you know, guards/wings. I know Milicic is 6'10" and kind of a power forward, but haven't seen any big men, you know, get linked to Tennessee in the portal yet. So that makes me think that they better really figure things out with the Waco, or that they think they can at least, because we haven't had any of those names surface yet unless I'm missing anybody. Am I?
No, you're not. And that's been something of note to me as well. That feels very interesting that you haven't seen any names pop up. And you're right, Milicic, who's 6'10", you would think is, all right, maybe a four who can play some five. You know, I was told he's really more of a 4-3 guy. He is not a true center. He's not a guy that's going to be able to protect the rim or play in the interior. So you're right. I will say the positive side of that there is this, at least in the transfer portal era, which is only a couple years long, this does feel like the deepest post group that there's been. So maybe if you miss out on the top couple guys, which it doesn't feel like Tennessee's a major player for any of those guys at this point, there's a possibility that you could still land some pretty competent players or some players that you feel like can come play 20 minutes a game, but you also wouldn't take any of those guys over Tobe or Walker either at this point.
Hey, Ryan, one more name, then we can probably put a bow on basketball as far as we know, is, and I haven't heard it recently in the last week or so, was Chaz Lanier. Is he kind of off the radar, do you think, at this point?
Well, he's not in the transfer portal, so in that sense, he's off the radar. I think, we'll see what happens there. If he were to hop in, I'm sure Tennessee would be interested, as would a number of teams, because he's such a high-level scorer. I mean, I think you saw that last week in relation to Dubar. There was that list of, I think, the 10 guys who had the highest offensive efficiency rating in college basketball last year, and both Dubar and Chaz Lanier were on that list. So it's Tennessee continues to, it feels like they really target offensive first guys in the portal. I imagine that, again, the Vols would be interested there, as a number of teams would if he does end up entering the portal. But as of now, he's going through the NBA draft process, and he's a grad transfer too, so that could linger on longer. He doesn't have to enter the portal before that May 1st deadline. He could enter it after that since he's a grad, and that could potentially be one to watch later on down the line if he does decide to enter the portal.
Yeah, you just answered my last question on that. So May 1st is really when the window closes for most all of these guys, right?
Yep.
Okay. Anything you're working on this week, Ryan?
No, it'll be a busy week. We'll have some baseball mid-SEC play takeaways kind of today and some questions, looking at things in the halfway point. I'm planning on going to Lexington this weekend to cover that series, and we'll have everything. It'll be a big transfer portal week for basketball and football, with it opening up today, too, for the football program. So plenty of stuff on all three sports.
How much have you looked into Kentucky baseball at this point in the season? I mean, I know their record is really good, but are they legitimate? Is this a series that Tennessee on the road should still expect to take 2 out of 3 in, or is Kentucky as good as their record shows? I mean, I know they're not going to be quite as good as their record shows, but are they a legitimate top-level SEC baseball team?
Yeah, I guess just going back to your first question there, is I haven't done a ton of research on them. Okay. I mean, my thought has kind of been they're not that good. They're not that good, but they keep on winning, so at some point they're obviously pretty darn good. No matter who they're playing in SEC play, I know it's been a little bit of a softer schedule to be raking up wins the way they have. So I think the goal should be to win 2 out of 3. You know, I sit here on Monday, I would probably pick Kentucky to take 2 out of 3 in that series. But warm weather in Lexington this weekend, I think, would be, which it's supposed to be, I think would be really big for Tennessee, because this is a Kentucky team that plays a lot of small ball. And obviously we know this is a Tennessee lineup that is very, very dangerous and has a lot of power, and warm weather lends to them having a potential big weekend.
Okay. Be honest. Better first pitch, Kim Caldwell or Dalton Connect?
Well, Dalton Connect, you know, they're not playing the same game. Dalton Connect's first person I've seen in a long time, first one this year who threw it from the rubber, which I was pretty impressed by. But, and I would say you take that out, his throw is maybe slightly better. He was a little bit in the batter's box, a little outside. I think Caldwell was a little high and inside. But, you know, no one bounced it this weekend. So I think good throws all around. But I got to give DK the nod because he threw from the rubber.
Ryan, appreciate the time, as always. Talk to you next week.
Yep, sounds great.
Thank
appreciate
you, buddy.
It, guys.
Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com, rshump00 on X. If you want to give him a follow, going to have some coverage this weekend live and in Lexington. Sam, great job by you. That segment sent us to break. It is the morning show here on Fan Run Radio. All right, let's play some winners and losers of the weekend as we sit here on Monday, kicking off the week. Sam, you got your intro ready yet?
Yeah.
All right, can you fire it up for us?
Winners and losers of the weekend.
Winners. Oh, I didn't know you were going to sing it.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I just need to go back and get all the clips of Cody singing it. Winners and losers.
Oh, so he would sing one?
Winners. Thanks for listening, Bob. And losers. Winners and losers.
Then about this time, you'd be like, all right, Cody, stop.
Winners and losers. All right, Bob, who won this weekend?
All right. Number three was... Vern Lundquist wraps up an unbelievable career, 40 years calling the Masters, not to mention all the other stuff he did with college basketball, college football. And CBS went, I wouldn't call it overboard, but they gave him a heaping amount of praise yesterday, and it was well-deserved. I mean, I was there for all of it. It was happy to hear it. He was very understated, you know, because really his last run was the 16th hole with the leaders with Scheffler up there. And he just did it the way he always did it. And
it's like his voice is cracking a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
Emotional, yeah.
I think so. And then I don't know if you saw any video on social media of Tiger stopping and shaking hands with him.
I didn't see the video, but I saw the picture. Yeah, as it is now going to be one of the most memed pictures coming out of maybe of 2024, because it looks like Tiger's just shaking hands with a tree. Yeah. And it's like me when I switched to paperless billing.
Yeah.
Well, the other one too was there's a picture I'm looking at right here where Tiger's standing on the 16th green and Vern's in the background, like sitting next to the tree and just sitting there. And it's like, it's very stalky looking, to be perfectly honest with you. But once you hear the context of it and everything else, it's pretty great.
So that's it for Vern, right? Because, I mean, he was still doing golf. That was the only thing he was still doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was able to...
Death now waits you.
I was very...
I like Vern.
Very fortunate. I was flying out. What year was this? Was it maybe 20... What year do you recall, John, when Tennessee beat Kansas when they were number one in the country in basketball here in Knoxville? It was 2010?
2010.
Yeah. The next morning, because that was a Sunday game, next morning I was flying out of town for work. I was in the security line, and it was a long one. And I turn around and look, and there's Vern Lundquist, like, right behind me. And
have you ever
yeah.
made it through an airport checkout that fast?
Yeah, he was and I was like, you know, fine line. I'm a big believer in, like, I'm a huge fan, so I wanted to say something, but I don't want to bother him either. But I did just lean over. I said, hey, Mr. Lundquist, just such a big fan, you know, just wanted to say hello. And he was like, oh, thank you. It was very short.
He said, get out of my face.
Yeah, he was a little disheveled, if I could be honest. But, of course, you know.
Woke up with a hangover trying to get to the airport. Vern liked the party.
Yeah. So, anyway, nice little send off for him. But my second one, Caitlin Clark, appeared on Saturday Night Live. The love affair with women's college basketball continues. Of course, she's in New York because the WNBA draft is tonight in Brooklyn. And she was on Weekend Update, which was kind of cool because Michael Che teed it up by saying that Caitlin Clark was going to trade in her sneakers for an apron. And so then, you know, they did that on purpose because then they have Caitlin Clark there. And Caitlin goes, actually, I'm here to talk, you know, and she gave some real praise to women's basketball, but then said, I've written a couple jokes that I'd like for you to read. It was kind of like what they typically do with Jost and Che. They were pretty funny jokes, and of course she very likely did not write them. But the best one was something to the effect of, I'm going to be drafted by the Indiana Fever, which, by the way, is not to be confused with what Michael Che gave a bunch of Purdue co-eds during his visit in Indiana, you know, just stuff like that. She read them. She did a good job. So, again, continues to raise the profile of women's basketball. When she came on, the place went nuts, too, as far as the studio audience. So that was kind of cool. My top winner of the week, we've talked about this a little bit, and I know the guys about the show and everything else, but I'm going to say Danny White. And the reason I say that is everything that happened this weekend, running the gamut from the unified Vol walk with the basketball team and the football team, and you know, the way they flexed the Kim Caldwell hire this weekend. Orange and white game, kind of lackluster, but you know, they built a lot of things around it, you know, culminated by a baseball sweep. I also heard an interview while I was in the car. I was driving for a little bit, and they were interviewing Danny White, and he was just talking about everything he's, you know, they're trying to do. And make no mistake, it's about making money, but it's also, he understands that the way you get to making money is have the fans spend money and creating facilities and everything else that's better than what they've had. And so he just to me, I think about the comparison of, can you imagine ever achieving even a fraction of this stuff with Philip Fulmer as the AD? I would say no. without a doubt.
That's such a funny funny thought exercise. No, I don't think Phil Fulmer could do anything as an AD.
Yeah.
And much less put on a show like this and have everything stable and feel like it's so well ran. No. I don't think so.
So I felt like this was just again, we've talked about it before. We're thankful for the administration we have. He's part of it. I just felt like this weekend, even with a lackluster orange and white game, it was just a showcase of what this university's athletic programs are about right now. Those are my winners.
We haven't shouted out the softball team, but another series win for them. They lost game one at Mississippi State, but battled back in 2 and 3 to win that series as they continue to lead the SEC standings, I believe, by 2 games. I believe they're 12-3, and the next closest is 10-5. My losers of the weekend, number 3, I went with the Minnesota Timberwolves, who had a chance to be the one seed, and they did not get the one seed. They end up in the 3 seed after getting blown out by the Phoenix Suns, who they now have to play in the first round of the playoffs. Minnesota was in kind of pole position all year in the West to win the West, at least in the regular season. But they kind of faltered over the last couple months. Oklahoma City, Denver passed them. And the Suns and Timberwolves play, and the Suns kind of own the T-Wolves. 3-0 against them this year with 2 blowout wins and another double-digit win. So all 3 games have been double-digit losses for the Timberwolves, and now they got to play Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal looks good over the last, you know, month of the season. So not good for Minnesota. Number 2, I went with the Chick-fil-A in Los Angeles. I don't know if you guys saw this last night, but maybe my favorite thing in sports last night was Boban. Boban, yes. Who is looking more freakish than usual. I don't know if his ears are still growing or what, but like he looks very freakish. But he, of course, is a Clippers fan favorite from his time there. They run a promotion where if you miss 2 free throws, if an opponent misses 2 free throws in the fourth quarter, everyone in the crowd gets a free sandwich. Boban missed the first free throw, then is caught on video telling the whole crowd, "I'm going to miss this one too. I got you guys. This is a thank you. Like, this is a gift from me." And then he misses the second free throw. The crowd goes crazy, and he's kind of pumping them up. I think he didn't get to play much at all this year. He was just kind of a vibes guy on the bench, but seemed like he was having a good time yesterday. Missed the free throws on purpose to get his fans some chicken. Also lost 2 jump balls to someone who is 6 foot throughout that game. So I think he was just out there putting on a show. But the Los Angeles Chick-fil-A, who is now going to have to give everyone in attendance a chicken sandwich because Boban tanked it on purpose. My second biggest losers of the weekend. Number 1, the Braves. Spencer Strider out for the year. Another injury for him. That's his second big-time injury. No other way to slice it. Got to be a loss for them. They got to be the losers of the weekend. Sam, anybody we missed?
For my winners, I had
your losers. Wait, did we do losers first?
No, we did winners.
I did losers first.
Bob did winners, and you just went losers.
God, I had it messed in the wrong order.
Yeah. So you want to roll your winners out, or you want me to?
Man, I blew that. Not sure how that happened. I think I wrote winners first, or maybe I had them in back order, and then I switched them, but then I forgot to switch. Okay.
I thought maybe I had some of your winners.
No, I just wrote it down in the wrong order.
Okay.
I blew it.
Do you want to roll it? Do you want
to?
You want me to come in relief?
I really don't know what to do here.
Let's do this. We'll stay on losers.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go back to losers, and then Sam, you just get to throw. Now you do your
loser. Yeah, listener, we're formatting the show live, so.
That's just dyslexia. That's what I'm
blaming. We'll do losers, and you can end it on a high note with your winners. How about that?
We got no other option, Bob.
Yeah. I'm just.
We got no other option.
I'm selling it. Okay, my losers, I only have two of them. First of all, the quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes, if you can see me on the X video, the A-list professional golfers and the challenges of Augusta. It's a tough course. Conditions were tough. But my goodness, man, former winners, Rahm, Matsuyama, Spieth, Phil, all of them, super high scores. Spieth missed the cut. Other golfers of note, Rory, Koepka, DJ missed the cut. Finau. DeChambeau had a couple days near the top, and you know he was still top 10 finish, but he faded pretty precipitously on the last couple days. It was we know that's an unforgiving course, but man, when we have all this talk about the best golfers in the world, this was a lot in my opinion. I mean, these were like all of the guys for the most part, with the exception obviously of Scottie Scheffler and Morikawa, but it was interesting to see. And then my other one was Prince Harry. Excerpts from his autobiography apparently indicate that he admitted to trying several drugs, and now the investigation may be underway to confirm that this could be a problem, because it's pretty likely he didn't disclose that in his visa application. So there's a that could
get
be
him
trouble.
Out of here. Yeah, send him back.
Yeah,
get him out of here.
Could be trouble for Prince Harry at this point. Those are my losers.
All right, Sam, any losers you want to add on to that?
I
already gave my three.
Mine are pretty similar to Bob's. It was some golf stuff, but JT for me, he went 7 over in his last four holes to miss.
God, I forgot
one.
About JT.
And then also Wyndham Clark, he went 1 over in the first round and was talking trash to these live guys about playing in 54 hole tournaments and like, oh, these guys aren't going to be prepared for 72. And
oh,
then
no.
He went out and shot like 7 over the next day to miss the cut himself.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say he fell apart on Sunday.
Oh no. He just missed the cut. And like, he was talking about these guys not being able to play a full tournament and he couldn't even play.
Very,
himself.
Very dismissive after the round, first round. Like, I'm fine, man. And all these live guys, they don't play 54. I'm good. And missed the cut.
Yeah.
I saw Zach Johnson also make a fool of himself as he was telling the crowd to bleep off after.
And then denied it.
Oh, really?
Like, in the press conference, they asked him about it. He was like, what do you mean?
I didn't do that at all. Said I was mad at myself. I mean, I might have said something
I
myself.
I hate Zach Johnson.
I wonder if he actually, like, in his mind was right. Like, in his mind, like, I didn't say that. Like, I was just,
I was talking to myself.
And I wonder if he actually remembered saying it, because it might have been something like a throwaway to him. I don't know. But, yeah, like, I saw people dancing on his grave. All right, ending it on a high note. Winners of the weekend. Sam, you got anybody you want to add before I bring it home?
I had Wake Forest baseball player Nick Kurtz. He's hit 13 home runs in 9 games. Just an unbelievable.
Who does he think he is? Christian Moore?
Yeah, I know. And then I also had Marcell Ozuna for how bad the Braves news has been. Marcell Ozuna has been incredible. They were down to their last strike. He hits a 3-run homer. He is off to a very hot start to start the year, hitting .373.
He's
seven
leading.
Homers.
He's leading the NL in all those categories, right? Yeah. Or at least
leading the league
in
homers.
Okay.
Yeah. 21 RBIs as well, 22 hits. Hot start for him. But yeah, tough news with Spencer Strider, obviously.
My winners of the weekend, number 3. I went with Max Holloway. All time knockout.
Yeah.
All time moment. A star-making moment when you can get the casuals to, like, look at it. I don't know if that means, like, people are going to buy his next fight, but whenever you show that type of power, people take notice, and I want to watch him fight the next time. Number 2 for me, I went with Conan O'Brien. I thought Conan O'Brien had a great weekend. He got his flowers on social media because he did the Hot Ones challenge. Are you familiar with that, Bob?
Yes. I didn't know he did it, but I'm familiar with Hot Ones for sure.
Sam, you familiar with Hot Ones?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I was wondering why Conan O'Brien was in the news, though.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien was in the news because he did Hot Ones, the season finale, and he absolutely dominated. Just kept eating every wing and just like, it's not hot. I'm fine. Like, and like the host is like, oh my God, the host is dying. Because like, no, give me more. Like, he was just really charming in the interview and was really good. And like, and like, it kind of led to people being like, hey, you know, we kind of took this guy for granted and this guy's great. And all this whole new generation doesn't know how great he was at being a talk show host and how talk shows in general used to be a thing and how they weren't just like over politicized, kind of boring infomercials like they kind of have become since then. So Conan dominated that, got through the whole challenge, was really funny, and has a new HBO show coming out this week. So Conan was my second biggest winner of the weekend. Number one, it's simple. It's boring. Just like him, Scottie Scheffler. The face of golf dominated. Big payday, record purse for the Masters, and he wins it going away. An easy $3.6 million. He's the biggest winner of the weekend. All right, my bad on messing that up. I wrote it down the wrong order. It won't happen again. Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. We'll talk some NBA playoffs coming up next.